Joining us now is Dr. Trita Parsi. He is the Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Great to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
Good to be with you guys.
So, Trita, first off, just your reaction to whatever that speech was last night from the president.
Yeah, what was that? I mean, really, to me, it sounded like a summary of his social media tweets and posts for the last 30 days, put kind of in chronological order. I did not see anything new. Threats that he has issued before and not acted upon, statements of why the Iranians are so bad in a rather confused way, nothing coherent whatsoever. I do not understand why he said that he wanted to give a speech. If the aim was to do a more aggressive intervention in the markets, you know, his previous interventions have been successful. The market, you know, the oil prices should be much higher than they are. But if the aim was that, you know, he needed to do something more aggressive because, his other interventions are starting to lose force, it achieved the opposite. Because essentially what people took away from that is that he does not have a plan. He didn't say anything new, and that's reflective of the fact that he doesn't have anything to say. He doesn't have a plan. And that led the markets to, you know, oil prices shot up again because the expectation that he himself had set was that this would be a statement, a speech in which he would talk about a winding down of the war. And that is not what people took away from that speech.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear from the reaction. Oil markets up some 13% as you and I are speaking. However, what's also important, I think, to say is this was obviously intended to Iran. And shortly before Donald Trump's speech, Iran released this letter to America. Let's go ahead and put some of the excerpts up here on the screen. I'm sure you've read it all fully. I'm curious if you could break it down, what import the letter actually has in their intention. What do you take away from it?
The Iranians are expecting Trump to go in with ground troops. They believe that this was a speech aimed at confusing everyone about his actual intent, but because of the Easter holiday and a couple of days in which the markets will be closed, they believe that he is likely to attack this evening or tomorrow, and that essentially everything that Trump does, the Iranians interpret it in the worst possible way. That is partly because of long-term paranoia, but also because of recent experience, given everything that Trump has done in terms of bombing them in the midst of negotiations. So I think these statements are two sides of the same coin. On the one hand, you have the president coming out, essentially declaring they have no enmity with the American people. This is a long-standing framing that they have. They want to put the blame on this, on Israel, and essentially say, why is the U.S. attacking Iran? There's no enmity that necessitates this type of a conflict. This is all because of Israel. On the other hand, you have Khalibov, the Speaker of the Parliament, who's now emerged as one of the last standing, most powerful men in that system, who issued a long tweet this morning in which he talked about how he lost his brother in the Iraq-Iran war. He himself volunteered at the age of 18 in that war, and that, these are losses that he still feels today, but this is the type of sacrifices the Iranians will make for their soil, for their homeland, and that they are ready. And he ends it with saying, bring it on. So they're sending two messages. On the one hand, they don't want any enmity. They don't understand why the U.S. is doing this. They believe it's because of Israel. But on the other hand, if the U.S. goes in with troops, the Iranians will fight to the last ounce of their being. Mm.
You mentioned there are repeated tactic of using negotiations as a ruse to begin wars and to assassinate various leaders. We've got another attempted example of that. We can put B4 up on the screen here. And I'm curious for your reaction to this news. So Kamal Karatsi, Iran's former foreign minister, has been seriously wounded following U.S.-Israeli strikes on his home that also killed his wife. He'd been overseeing talks with Pakistan to arrange a possible meeting between Iranian officials and J.D. Vance. First of all, do you suspect that this was Israel that conducted this attempted assassination? And then what do you think is the significance of this particular attack?
I think it's quite certain that it is Israel that is behind this, just as much as Israel has been behind most of these other assassinations. Perhaps there's intelligence that they get from the United States, but they're the ones who have been conducting these assassinations. This is someone who was involved in these talks. I don't know if he was leading it or not, but he is an old foreign policy hand. Even 2-3 years ago, he gave a speech at the Doha Forum. He was essentially sent there as an envoy of the then Supreme Leader Khamenei. He served as Iran's foreign minister for many, many years. And within that system, these former officials still tend to play a critical role. And given the fact that so many of them have been assassinated, it means that the remaining ones end up playing an even greater role. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that he has been deeply involved, whether he was overseeing it or not, but deeply involved in this channel initiated by some regional states and currently led by Pakistan. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Israelis would target him is just a continuation of a long-standing pattern in which the Israelis are trying to kill every person that potentially not only could negotiate, but also could bring the Iranian system into a consensus on a deal. It's very important to understand this point. This is a very diverse system. They have factions, a lot of infighting, etc. It's not just about having someone who has the capability of negotiating, who has the endorsement of the Supreme Leader, but also someone who can build consensus within that system in order to go along with an agreement. So when they killed Ali Larijani last week or so, that was someone who played a critical role in getting conservatives to agree to the JCPOA 11 years ago. And he had that ability. He was essentially the consensus maker in chief. Going after Kharazi is just a continuation of that pattern. And it's very interesting because Trump himself said when he was asked, who will you negotiate with? He said, perhaps I shouldn't say it because they might get killed. Revealing that he himself seems to understand that the Israelis are killing off his counterparts in order to make sure that this war does not end.
Hmm. You know, I'm just thinking through how exactly some sort of deal could be made. And it seems very clear, like you said, that you need a consensus maker with credibility who can speak to the West, who could speak with some of the hardliners. It seems that we made the job actually much harder because we've killed many of the consensus makers, and or Israel has, and we also killed the Ayatollah, really strengthening the hands of a lot of these hardliners. At this point, what do you think they could accept or would accept, really? Because it seems very clear from many of the demands, their most maximalist demands, it's not really going to happen. Some are seeing that as a negotiation tactic. Are they being serious about that? Like, where do they view themselves internally to the point where they could actually want to make a deal?
I think something very significant has happened, which is that the U.S.'s position, acceptance, etc., may no longer matter. And this is thanks to Trump's own statements. Trump is saying that, you know, the Strait of Hormuz is not that important to the U.S. It's feeding European and Asian markets, not American markets. So, you know, we don't care about that. If you want to open it, you open it. By saying something like that, perhaps he thinks that he's taking Iran's leverage away from Iran, because Iranians are obviously controlling it. And originally, at least, I think they were aimed at using it as a point of leverage in a negotiation with the U.S. At this point, it seems like they're moving ahead regardless of what the U.S. position is. The U.S. simply cannot do much about this. And they're going to be using their control. They're not going to keep it closed. They're opening it. But they're opening it vis-a-vis fees that they will get for transit. And they may keep it closed for some hostile countries. But they're essentially looking at the control of the Strait of Hormuz, eventually in a collaboration with Oman, which probably will have a grounding in international law. You have several examples of this in some variations. The Danish have for 400 years taken transit fees for ships going through Öresund, the opening to the Baltic Sea. And that they will use that in order to recuperate money for all of the damages that have been inflicted on Iran as a result of this war. So as these damages increase, it's not that the Iranians are hardening their position necessarily. It's that they have no choice but to try to find other ways of being able to compensate and pay for the massive cost of reconstruction that will follow this war that increasingly is taking an Israeli character. And I think this is very important to understand. I've been very critical of the Iraq war, but the United States did not deliberately, intentionally bomb universities or pharmaceutical factories in Iraq. That's what the Israelis do in Lebanon. That's what they have done in Gaza. Destroyed almost every university there. And that is what they're starting to do in Iran as well. Just today, they bombed a very important pharmaceutical or medical research institute that was built together with the French more than 100 years ago. Hmm. And the United States is now complicit in this Israeli form of warfare that is actually very different from how the U.S. has conducted war. Again, you know, I'm very critical of the Iraq war and other things, but this is just way beyond that. This is just an absolute destruction. And again, because Trump doesn't appear to have a plan, by default, he is following the Israelis' lead. And this is also what we see when he says that he's going to bomb the Iranians back to the Stone Age. That is an Israeli goal. They don't care about the political fallout. They just want to destroy as much of Iran's infrastructure, industrial base as possible in order to eliminate Iran as a geopolitical player in the region. What comes afterwards, what it does for the regional stability is of a far lesser concern to the Israelis. That is not the American goals or interest in this war. But because Trump doesn't have a plan, he's just following what the Israelis are.
Yeah. I mean, I think in fairness, you know, the ideology of Pete Hegseth in particular, but Trump to some extent as well, is very consistent with that Israeli ideology. I mean, one of the things Pete Hegseth is known for is going to bat with for convicted war criminals and trying to get them off the hook and posturing constantly like any sort of rules of engagement are basically like liberal woke nonsense. So, you know, Stephen Miller articulated this view, I think, most clearly when he said effectively, like, power is power. That's what really rules the world. And that's the way we're going to operate. We're going to throw our weight around. And certainly Trump, as sort of like his mob boss style of leadership, he goes along with that, too. So, you know, we already were complicit in the genocide in Gaza throughout the Biden and Trump administrations. And now, you know, we're more than happy to go along with the Israeli approach of, quote unquote, bombing them back to the Stone Age. And so that leads me to wonder, Trita, if what we're going to end up with here is adopting effectively the Israeli, quote unquote, mow the lawn approach, where every now and again we go in and bomb them back to the Stone Age and make some noises about, oh, they're pursuing this weapon or they're pursuing that weapon. We can't allow it. We've got to go in and, you know, kill a bunch more people. Is that the direction that we could be heading for here?
Absolutely. First of all, you're totally right about your previous comment. That is, the Israelization of American warfare could not happen without the consent of decision makers in the United States. And those decision makers already have shown prior to this an inclination in going in that direction. And I've also heard even before during the Gaza war that there were people in the Pentagon that were rather happy to see the Israelis deliberately destroy the norms around the use of force, because that would open up the U.S.'s ability to conduct a potential war with China in a much different way than it otherwise would. So undoubtedly, there are people in Washington who have been quite favorable in going in this direction in the first place. So you're right about that. On your second point, Trump has already admitted this. He said that in interviews 2 days ago, that he's going to bomb them back to the Stone Age. And then if they rebuild, the next president will have to go in and bomb them again. Mm-hmm. That is mowing the lawn. That is the very essence of mowing the lawn. And this is precisely why previous presidents actually didn't do it, because all of the gaming showed that this is the situation we would end up in. And as a result, we would be in a state of eternal warfare with Iran, which is something everyone else, including Trump in his first term, decided would be a terrible situation to be in. Now, not only are we there, Trump seems to be embracing it as if this is what he wanted all along.
So then last question, sir, you said the Iranians are expecting a ground invasion. How likely do you think that that is?
Look, it's impossible to be able to predict what's going to happen, because predictions require some sense of some assumption of rationality in the White House. And then based on that rationality, you make some sort of an assumption, some assessment of what direction they would go in. If there was rationality, we would never have started this war in the first place. It's not just a miscalculation. It's a complete misread of the situation that brought Trump into this war and listening to the Israelis. So at this point, would it be utterly irrational, suicidal to go in with ground troops, suicidal in terms of destroying Trump's presidency? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is that a reason as to why he wouldn't do it? Based on what we've seen in the last couple of years, it's absolutely not a guarantee that he won't do it. The Iranians are essentially assuming that's going to happen. They're preparing for this, and they will be in a position in which they will then be able to, they will take huge losses undoubtedly, much more will be destroyed, but they will be able to inflict a certain type of a damage that so far they have not been successful in doing, which is to kill a large number of American soldiers. And once that happens, it will be very difficult for me to see that Trump's base will continue to trust Trump on this one, continue to believe that this was worthwhile, continue to believe that this is a winning war. And that's part of the reason I think he will destroy his own presidency if he goes down that path. That, however, is not a guarantee that he won't.
All right. Well, Dr. Tritaparsi, we're always grateful for your analysis. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, if you like that video, hit the like button or leave a comment below. It really helps get the show to more people.
And if you'd like to get the full show ad-free and in your inbox every morning, you can sign up at BreakingPoints.com.
That's right. Get the full show. Help support the future of independent media at BreakingPoints.com.